Hello and welcome to the Burstbot Scottish Football Podcast with me, Hamish Carton, The Last Supper with Andrew Gamba.
Hello Hamish, how are you?
I'm good. Why is it The Last Supper, Gamba?
Well, this might be my last appearance for a wee while, it would seem, but who knows, like Christ, I may return victoriously, or like Judas, I might just disappear into infamy, who knows.
Hopefully it's the former. It'll be good to have you back at some stage, but if this is your final episode for a considerable period of time, let's go out like Jesus did. How did Jesus go out? I should probably know this.
Nailed to a cross. I mean, I think when he comes back, he puts on a wee bit more of a show when he came back, but first time, not great, a bit brutal, in my opinion.
And when he goes away the second time, he doesn't go to death, does he? He just kind of, is that when he walks away into the sunset and kind of, or up into the clouds?
I think there's a levitating act of some sort going on as well. Mm. I don't read that shit. I just know he died and then he came back. I don't know what happened afterwards. He's probably still about somewhere. Who knows? Just kicking about.
Yeah. Callum Fisher, how are you?
I'm all right, Hamish. I'm just kind of wondering what kind of fucking podcast I'm on tonight. But apart from that, mate, I'm all good. Good to be here.
Right, now the formalities are out of the way, let's get into the actual football from the weekend. Probably only one place to start, the game on Sunday lunchtime at Easter Road. It finished Hibernian 2, Rangers 2. Really good game, I thought. It was the kind of game that you just wish Easter Road had been packed for, because the atmosphere would have been brilliant. But saying that, I really enjoyed it. Rangers started pretty well, should have probably been one, maybe two goals up with a couple of chances they had early on. Morelos misses a good headed opportunity, then Hibs go down the other end, Nisbet forces a good save from McLaughlin, Hibs then take the lead, Rangers score in the stroke of half time, they fight back, dominate probably the vast majority, certainly the first 20-25 minutes of the second half, go 2-1 up through Arfield, and then Hibs equalise. You kind of thought Hibs were down and out, but as they've done on many occasions, I hate to remind you, Fisher, against Rangers over the years, they come back, they get the equaliser, and at that stage, late on in the game, it could really have gone either way. In fact, I kind of felt that when it went 2-each, there was going to be a winner. I couldn't tell you what team it was going to go for, but I felt there was going to be a fifth goal. Sadly, there wasn't. Marciano probably had a lot to do with that, saving Scott Arfield twice late on, the second one especially. A brilliant, brilliant save, even though Arfield should score. But you kind of leave the game feeling that it was a pretty good game. Fisher, you're probably less likely to say that, although you may still concede that it was a decent match.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. That's probably the best game that's been on Sky since the season started.
This whole weekend in general, a lot of goals, a lot of good games. Very, in stark contrast to the start of the season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously we'll get to the rest of the games in due course, but certainly for a neutral, I think this game was everything that you'd probably expect from a Hibs-Rangers game. I mean, Alan McCoy Stephen said on the commentary after about 5 minutes that he was surprised at how open it was, and that was kind of the case for the full game. There wasn't ever any kind of point in the game where either side was kind of cagey. Both sides went for it. I thought Hibs showed for me why so far, I know we praised Aberdeen last season, but I thought Hibs really showed in that game why they have probably been the best side out with Rangers and Celtic so far this season. Obviously, as the result shows, possibly even on par. I think the frustrating thing from a Rangers point of view is, for Hibs' first goal, if Barisic closes down Boyle's kind of poor first touch, then he maybe stops the cross getting in. And the second goal, Goldson just needs to do anything but what he did with the ball, and Rangers probably get out of trouble there. I thought, especially when Rangers had come back to get it to 2-1, I've seen in the kind of various group chats and stuff like that, you know, we need to get that third goal to kill the game. And it ever was thus with Steven Gerrard's Rangers. We just really do struggle to kill off games, and it came back to bite us. But Hibs were more than worthy of their point, I think, in the end up. But just looking at the stats, I mean, for Rangers to have 19 shots, only 7 on target, fair enough, but to have 19 shots and not come away with the win is really disappointing.
I saw probably the worst most ill-informed tweet ever earlier. It came from I Ready Podcast. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's actually been deleted now. More on that in a wee second. The original tweet comes from the BBC's Jane Lewis, who was hosting their Sunday coverage on Sportsound. She says, "A couple of cracking games today on Sportsound. Thought over the 90 minutes, Hibs deserved to draw with Rangers. Yes, Martin Boyle was offside, but Rangers could have done more." They could have done more to clear the danger. The reply, quotation marks, "She was sexually assaulted, but if she wasn't wearing such a short skirt," close quotation marks. The tweet has now been deleted by iReady Podcast. They say, 8 hours ago, "Taken down an ill-thought tweet. Apologies all. No offence intended, Derek."
It's certainly one way to interpret a game of football. It's probably not the correct way. I don't really know where to go from that particular point of view, but just trying to take it back to the game. I mean, Hibs were, the thing for me in the last 10-15 minutes was, I was as concerned about Hibs going on to get a third as I was hopeful that Rangers would go on and get a third and win the game, do you know? So I think the stats obviously show that Rangers were the dominant team, and for the most part, obviously, they were, but Hibs certainly showed enough to be valued, to be worth the point. And the thing is, as I mentioned previously, if Rangers don't kill off the game, then that's always likely to happen, particularly at Easter Road. So I think from a Rangers point of view, it's more looking at what Rangers could have done better to win that game, rather than looking at obviously the offside decision or any particular incidents with any fouls or players that couldn't have been on the park. I think Rangers, with all of that set to one side, Rangers should have done enough to win that game, and they didn't.
Thoughts on the game, Gamba? Did you manage to see it, and what did you think?
Yeah, an entertaining game of football on telly, finally. And obviously the Celtic game, there was quite a few goals in there, but it did seem a bit one-way traffic. No, I really, really enjoyed it. As you said, it's just disappointing you couldn't have anyone actually in the ground to see it, because it would have been a cracking atmosphere, especially, you know, given the way that the game was going, and also to do with, I do just want to kind of touch on the kind of Porteous versus anyone in the Rangers team antics. I mean, that would have got people fired up as well. I'm a big fan of the kind of fallout for that, and just people just getting wound up by Porteous, man. I mean, he's all right, but like, just the level of just reaction to what he was doing during the game, just noising people up, I think has been quite interesting, considering, like, I think what Porteous had done is something that people have been doing, especially to kind of Morelos throughout his time in Scotland. And I think something that maybe hasn't really been brought up is, obviously, it was noising Morelos up as much as he could during the game, and Morelos didn't get sent off. So you could actually interpret this in a strange way of Morelos developing as a player, that he didn't get sent off when someone was just trying to wind him up throughout the game. I don't think it's a point that's been made too much recently, but you know, I think Morelos deserves credit for not getting sent off in this game, considering there was so much emphasis on Porteous just winding people up. It's going to be an interesting one for Hibs, because I heard Jack Ross basically saying, like, yeah, our season's not going to be defined against games against Rangers, which is usually what you hear from managers down at the bottom of the table, not someone that's sat, you know, where are they now? Third? Second? They'll go back second now, won't they?
Third.
They are third now again. Right. I mean, sat in there, like, it's interesting to hear him kind of hitting out with that kind of, like, oh, our season's not going to be defined by these games, when it might be. That might be a good point coming into the season, who knows?
You're not suggesting.
No, of course not. They might get a European spot out of that point.
Yeah. I thought Hibs were good, like, don't get me wrong, they played some good. So I think Martin Boyle was a really underrated player in this league, and I thought Porteous actually had a pretty good game, even away from all the kind of the antics, if you want to call it that. And to be fair, the vast majority of the antics came after the game, or certainly, you know, in stoppage time and after the game. He had that wee thing with Morelos and then after the match. But Sky didn't really show that at all. So it was only really the quotes from Gerrard, to be honest, that brought it home after the game. But I thought that part of the game was interesting. He's obviously got a bit of a history against Rangers, Fisher, last year with Barisic, I think, in the year before with, I want to say, Candias.
I think Gerrard made the point, obviously, that he got sent off last year for that challenge on Barisic, if I remember correctly. The thing for me, as frustrating as it might be from Rangers' point of view, and certainly watching it at the time, there was a few words shouted at the telly in Porteous' direction, but if that's a Rangers player doing that in a game where we are winning, then you're all over it and you're loving it. So you just have to kind of make do with it, particularly, and this goes into a completely different conversation about Morelos and what maybe players are allowed to get away with against him because of his reputation, but it's kind of part and parcel of what you expect with centre-halves against Morelos and Rangers. And to be fair, I think Morelos even last season didn't react as, you know, anywhere near as much as he did in Gerrard's first season and before that. So, yeah, I mean, the best way to shut Porteous up and to stop that happening is to beat Hibs. And as I'll come back to, Rangers didn't do enough to win the game, and it's completely understandable that he's going to do that. What I would want from a Rangers point of view is for that, for his antics or whatever, behaviour or whatever, to be noted by the Rangers players and just make sure that when we play Hibs again that we go out and do business, because if Rangers win that game 3-2, then, you know, he's got nothing to wind anybody up about. So, yeah, I've got no real problems, as I say, with players winding other players up. It's part and parcel of the game. Obviously, there was a real physical side to Hibs yesterday, and that's a discussion, I suppose, for a podcast where we've got more time. But as I say, it's part and parcel of the game, and the best way to stop that happening is to go out and beat them.
Yeah, I don't mind a bit of physicality. I know some of it was maybe over the top, and certainly Rangers fans feel that Hanlon should definitely have been sent off for his challenge or his elbow on Hadji. But on the whole, I don't mind a bit of physicality. I think too many teams face up against Celtic and Rangers and, you know, don't put a challenge in many ways and almost, you know, back down and take their medicine and take the defeat. But I don't mind seeing a team like Hibs, who, you know, are a good footballing side, being able to put the foot in, and it's interesting to see how, you know, Celtic and Rangers deal with it. Obviously, we'll get to see how Celtic deal with it against Hibs on Sunday. On that very topic, Gamba, Celtic 3, Livingston 2 on Saturday afternoon. Again, a really good game, end-to-end stuff. Livingston scored the first and the last goals in the game, 2 goals at Celtic Park, yet they still come away with 0 points.
Yeah, they were decent. Livingston, better than some of the other performances I've seen from them this season. Certainly, kind of going forward, from a Celtic kind of point of view, the penalty, I don't really have many complaints. I know that I was kind of screaming for a penalty about 2 minutes before that on the other end. But again, It's one of those ones where they would have been disappointed not to be able to get to half time with the lead. The McGregor goal's an absolute cracker, I thought, for Celtic. And I know quite a lot of the Livingston players, I was of course listening to the highlights without any of the commentary over it, and you could hear from the stadium noise, a few of the Livingston players made it quite clear to the linesman they thought Greg Taylor was offside. When the ball came in, it wasn't quite as good as the Hibs St Johnson.
I wanted to mention about the offside thing, because Sports Scene said that they couldn't actually prove whether it was offside or not, because they couldn't see if the left back was playing on one side or not. Like in 2020, we couldn't actually tell. We didn't actually have a camera angle being able to tell us whether it was offside or not.
Which is great, because there's all the shouts for like VAR to come up in Scotland, and then like a moment like that, you realise it's like, oh, we literally couldn't do it. Like even if we had it, it'd be like, yeah, the goal just stands because, you know, it's that Richard Keys tweet where he's talking about the ball going over the line in the World Cup, where it's like, got us another angle, can see it's in. It's like up in Scotland, couldn't do that, couldn't even get us another angle to see whether it was offside or not. So I don't know, it's just a kind of mystery that'll evade us until the end of time, whether he was onside or not. As I said, certainly from the commentary-less audio, the Livingston players made it quite clear they thought he was offside. And again, I thought Taylor's assist was quite good as well, because him and the goalie have been getting some stick. Don't know whether the goalie gets quite a bit of stick for the goal at the end. I thought it was a good hit, but I can understand when you look at the angle, certainly behind the goal, kind of thinking, can he do a wee bit better than that? But it's, you know, you know, it's just absolutely rifled it, man. I do just want to very quickly just touch on a Yeti's finish though as well. Like, that was class. I thought that was just real class with his kind of with his left foot, just to kind of dink it around the keeper. It's interesting the keeper coming out to get to the goal that puts Celtic 3-1 up. But it's a real kind of old school kind of proper striker's finish from that one, which and I think Edouard's a different type of forward. There's more of a kind of a strange kind of like class and kind of really good dribbling ability with him. Ayeti kind of strikes me as someone that is just a kind of poacher and will just take chances and finish them maybe a bit better than Edouard will. I'm getting that feeling from what I've seen from him so far. Whether I'll be proved wrong on that, I probably will. I usually am. But I'm really liking Ayeti's kind of movement and his finishing from what I've seen. There's a touch of the kind of Gary Hoopers about it that I quite like.
Yeah, it was a brilliant finish. I don't think Edouard scores that kind of goal, because I think if Edouard's in the same position, he tries to take it round the keeper, or be fancy. And he probably scores, to be fair to him, but I just loved the way Ayeti finished that. And the actual quality of the goals in that game was brilliant, I thought. Like, you could look at, obviously the first goal was a penalty, but you could look at the other four goals and say they were all really good goals.
They were
like
brilliant,
The boy Serrano's goal for Livingston, like, that's an absolute screamer. And I heard he had a really good game as well. He's on loan from Monaco, and like, occasionally these wee, I was about to use the word diddy, we don't use that word in this podcast, but the smaller teams in the league occasionally get these players that you look at and you go, God, he shouldn't be there. Like, the obvious one I always think from years ago is Marius Nicolai at Inverness, and you just think, how have they managed to get this player? Like, James McCarthy at Hamilton was obviously another one. And I'm not saying Serrano's going to be at that level for Livingston. And obviously they've had Lyndon Dykes as well. But he looks like a really good catcher. And if he's come from Monaco, he's obviously, without sounding like an absolute da, like, he's obviously deserves to be there. Like, he's obviously got some sort of quality. So I'm excited to see how he gets on this season. Even separate from his goal, I heard he handled Frimpong quite well, especially in the first half. So he looks quite tall and quite kind of leggy, but obviously has a lot of quality as well if he was able to score that goal. So, interested to see how that goes. I believe Livingston are bottom of the league as well, which is obviously going to be concerning. But if they're coming away from Celtic Park feeling a little bit aggrieved with missing a good-headed chance late on, then, you know, there's plenty of positives. And we also got the Forest derby as well. They both came on. Yes. Alan and James came on at the same time, which was a sight that was pretty funny to see. I doubt that's ever happened in Scottish football, with two brothers coming on to face each other as subs at the exact same time in separate teams. But hey-ho, Callum Fisher, where do you want to go next?
Why don't we go to Tannadice then?
Why don't we go to Tannadice indeed? Another rash moment in this game. Can we just touch on that first? Yeah. What is Tate thinking of?
That cost me a -3 in my fantasy team, so that was really good of Richard Tate. I'd like to personally thank him for that. Just a bizarre tackle right in front of the linesman, I think. I mean, it wasn't even as if, you know, you can maybe sometimes understand those challenges if your team's getting an absolute doing, it's the last couple of minutes and, you know, you've just had enough. But it's right in front of the linesman. St Mirren are still in the game. St Mirren were in the game throughout, despite being behind. Just a moment of madness. I couldn't, because when I was watching it, watching the highlights back, and I just looked at it, and I was just like, I don't understand. He looks at the linesman as well as if that's not a set. Just bizarre. Just a bizarre
thing. The linesman must have been right there as well, was he?
Aye, he was right in front. I'm almost certain, if I go back and watch the highlights again, that the linesman's, if he's not right in front of the challenge, he's like, there's no way he can miss it. Like, it's just absolutely flies in. I'm sure the linesman's actually directly behind the Dundee United player, if I'm not mistaken. Just a bizarre challenge.
Just so strange. I'd love to know and watch the 5 minutes before that and see if there was any kind of history between him and I don't know, whoever he took out. But it just seemed so strange. I know they were losing 2-0, but as you say, it's not usually you see those challenges 89th minute when you're losing 2-0 or 3-0, and it's a player getting a bit of revenge because they know the game's gone. The game wasn't gone at that stage, but then when he makes that challenge and gets sent off, you could argue it was then, albeit that St Mirren come back and very nearly get a draw. We should probably talk about the Lauren Shankland goal, though. For me, Boost. Like, I saw Dundee United a few weeks ago against Killie, and I saw what I thought was goal of the season. I still think it's probably Rory McKenzie's goal that edges it, but like the thing I love about it is you don't see goals like that very often. Like he's going away from goal, he's kind of, it's not a bicycle kick, it's not an overhead kick, it's like a hooked kick from the outside of the box, I think, or very close to, on the volley, right into the corner. It's an absolute belter.
Yeah, the way he twists his body to get to it is brilliant, and the fact that the keeper, I think there's always something that makes the goals a little bit better if the keeper has to try and scramble to get it, and obviously Zlamal's had to kind of scramble across to his far post to get it. But yeah, just the technique on it, and as I say, the way he kind of contorts his body to kind of wrap himself around the ball. Yes, that's the word of the pod, contort. but yeah, just a brilliant goal, and I suppose it's good from Shanklin's point of view. There was a lot of talk, I know he's been injured, but there was a lot of talk with Dundee United coming up, is he going to be able to do it in the top flight? But to get your first kind of top flight goal and for it to be like that is got to be confidence boosting, but also takes a bit of pressure off him that he's got the goal, and now he can kind of just settle in and start getting back to doing what he does best, which is obviously putting the ball in the back of the net.
You, Hamish Carton in particular, may remember the greatest striker ever to grace Scottish football scoring a goal similar to that against Hibs. I think this was Stokes about eight years ago. Aye.
From memory, that was at a more...
I was going to say, I don't think it was as good as the Shankland one, but it's, you know... It's up there, I would say. It's up there. But it's only players... It's obviously only players of Stokes' calibre that can do things like that, you know, obviously.
Not Lyndon Dykes. I couldn't see Lyndon Dykes doing that.
I just love how he's managed to get a... Anthony Stokes reference into a chat about a brilliant Shankland goal. And listen, Dundee United got the win, and they got the win despite Mark Reynolds doing his best not to get them the win with some more horrid defending. I thought this guy was going to be a standout for them this season, and I'm sorry, from the limited bits I've seen, I must admit, I've only seen him, well, I say limited, I've seen him two full games, and I've seen highlights of like Sunday and that. I'm not convinced he's the Mark Reynolds of a few years ago. Well, he's certainly not the one at Motherwell that got the move to Aberdeen, but I don't know what age he's now. He must be pushing 33, something like that, if I was guessing. That maybe slightly too old, I don't know, but he seems like he's struggling a bit, and that was terrible defending. It's a good finish from, I think, the boy Connolly's name is for St Mirren, but bit of a miserable time for St Mirren at the moment, Fisher. They're struggling, and obviously all the COVID stuff hasn't helped, but they're... you know, three defeats in the space of a week, they're shipping goals like mad.
Yeah, I mean, I thought towards the kind of in the second half, St Mirren probably will feel a little bit hard done by, that they maybe didn't take something from the game. I mean, even if you went to the first half, Lee Irwin had a couple of good chances early on. McAllister went close with a free kick, and I did actually put down in my notes that Segris had to make a couple of good saves. But the thing with St Mirren is they need to start taking their chances to obviously take points from games, and it's been the case in a couple of games I've seen them now whereby they create things and they are very competitive with everyone they play, but they just don't take their chances. And even defensively, I mean, for the second goal that Dundee United scored, albeit a good finish, it was really poor defending. And for me, just watching the highlights as well, Zlamal seemed to push every single save back into trouble. I really do feel they could do with getting Jack Anik back as quick as possible, because he was in really good form for them at the start of the season. But I still think St Mirren will be okay. It's the same with Livingston, obviously, despite Livingston being bottom of the table. I think St Mirren are better than two or three teams that they're down there with at the moment. And it's been a tough period for them, but they've not been outplayed by anybody. And even in midweek against Celtic, I did think they were very competitive. They were again against Dundee United. So I think it has been a bit of a sticky patch for them, but I'm pretty confident in St Mirren that they'll bounce back and start getting results.
Yeah, I'm just going to learn to stop making any outlandish comments about any team in the bottom eight of the league, because they're all just so inconsistent, and any of the eight can beat any of the other eight on any given day at any venue. And at the start of the season, I was saying about how good St Mirren were and Ross County and Dundee United as well, and all of them have kind of dropped off. I mean, that was Dundee United's first win in four, I think. They lost three prior to that, albeit, you know, Rangers and Celtic, I think, were two of them. But I think I can't call who's going to finish bottom. I'm still sticking with Hamilton, but I genuinely can't call out of any of those eight who's going to finish bottom. There's a few teams that I would look at and I'd go, they'll probably be all right. Like Dundee United, for example, I think they've got too strong a manager and probably too many good players to be in a bottom two spot. But like the rest of them, like Hamilton, Livingston, Ross County, St Mirren for me, Motherwell are probably too good as well. But it's just like any team can beat any team in this league at the bottom of the league anyway. If we move on to Rugby Park, two of those teams that could well be there at the bottom, although Killy may have to say something about that. It was Kilmarnock against Hamilton, 2-1 win for Killy. Just want to comment on the photo I put in the group chat, first of all. The hair of Marius Ogpo, the Hamilton forward. What the hell is that? I'll probably stick it on the Twitter so that you know what we're talking about. But,
it's kind of like it's for like Travis Bickle and Taxi Driver, like kind of mohawk type thing. I thought he was lucky to stay in the park because he should have been at least booked for the challenge on Finlay, and then he was booked again. Oh, sorry, then he was actually booked as well. But there was a spell in that game where I was like, how is he staying on the park? Because he was just clattering into boys. But I thought Kilmarnock were good value for their win. I actually thought the decision to send Brophy off was correct. But after that, Killy, it didn't really seem to affect Kilmarnock at all in the second half. They looked just as good with 10 men. And I think, as you say, Hamish, it's just Kilmarnock have just been so inconsistent at the moment. Mm. But that for them, with 10 men, I think Killy showed the best of themselves, certainly in the second half, as I mentioned, and that'll be a confidence booster for them, absolutely.
Yeah, KC's been talking about this run of three games they've got that effectively he thinks is going to spell out this season, but also is going to spell out Alex Dyer's time at the club and whether he's a success or a failure. Do we think that you've obviously said the Brophy's a red card, and I probably agree, but part of me's looking at that on Saturday night and just going I know football went a long time ago and the game's completely gone, but it's a red card. If you're asking me, is it a red? I think it is, but part of me's looking at it and going, are you really sending players off for that? Like, there's no malice, there's no intent. Yes, his foot's high and his studs are showing and all that, but it is daft for Brophy, but part of me looks at it and just goes, are we really sending folk off for that? Tell me I've not lost my mind, Gamba.
No, it's one of these great footballing cliches where he has given the referee a decision to make with the way he's gone into it, which I can understand where you're coming from, where you're like, it's probably not, but I can absolutely see why it's a red card. And I think it's one of those ones, if you're invested in the game somewhat, and that goes, if that tackle goes into a player that's on your team, I think you're screaming for a red card in that situation. So I get your point. I understand where you're coming from, but I do agree with Fisher. I do think it probably was a red card at the end of the day, but I can understand why you'd look at it and go, come on, man, just let it slide. I can understand that. But I don't think you should.
Right. Listeners, these two have failed me. Do any listeners out there want to help me out? Anyone listening to this right now thinks that it shouldn't have been a red card? Please tweet me in so I feel like I'm not totally alone. Although I do say that it probably was, but it's not the referee's decision, it's more the laws I've got the problem with.
Bring back proper tackles and public hangings, in my opinion.
I just think football's gone, to be honest. Like, the whole penalty thing at the weekend down south, and now keepers can't come off their lines, and now red cards. But I just think we're seeing so many penalties and red cards that they're almost like every game now you're getting a penalty. In almost every game you're getting a red card, and I just feel like it wasn't always like this. But anyway, a couple of the final comments on the Kilmarnock game. Chris Burke, I just think, brilliant again. When that guy's going to stop performing to a top level, I don't know. I just think he's a brilliant player. Just continually stands out for Killy at whatever age he is. And also, Kilmarnock fans just want Alex Dyer to do well in the job. I think he's really liked at Rugby Park. And hopefully, I think he's a really, really nice guy, and I know they often say nice guys don't make football managers. Well, hopefully he can prove to be the exception and he can go on a winning run now, because it'd be good to see Kilmarnock up doing well in the league. They're never going to get back to the level they were under Steve Clarke, because he was just doing incredible with them and got them above where any Killy fan could have dreamed of, to be honest. But I would like to see Killy safe from relegation, pushing for a top six spot under Alex Dyer. Will it happen? Probably not, but I think we all... Killy are kind of the pods team in a way, aren't they? Just because of a certain man from the town. So hopefully...
We've brainwashed most of us into giving them a top six finish in our prediction, so they fucking better, man.
Not me, Gamba. Not me. I can't remember where I had them, but it certainly wasn't top six. Right, probably the most forgettable game of the weekend.
Oh, hell yeah.
And probably any weekend, to be honest. St Johnstone, Ross County. Just looking at this, like, something tells me in my daft kind of mind that away teams always seem to win this fixture. Now, I could be massively wrong. I know we've got a listener out there, and forgive me, I can't actually remember his name, but he's a regular listener, and I think he works with St Johnstone, so I'm sure he'll be listening to this. Let me know if I'm right or wrong, but it seems like the away record in this fixture is always really strong. I remember loads back in the day, Ross County going to Perth and winning just like they did on Saturday, and vice versa. Anyway, the funny thing about this game, I thought, was Alex Iacovitti claiming the goal. Not a chance for me that it came off any part of him. I think it was Ian Vigers, actually, who should have got the goal. I don't know what the dubious goal panel are going to do. I don't even know if we have a dubious goal panel.
It went to Vigers,
didn't
it? I think it did go to... I'm sure it did.
Yeah, it's been awarded to Vigers.
Do we have a dubious goal panel in Scotland?
I don't think
Are we
so.
The dubious goal panel?
I suppose we could be.
Might as well.
That could be our unique selling point for the pod. We are the dubious goals panel. Know how, like, obviously, like, other pods have, like, TV shows and other ones, like, have just get shite content and that. Like, we could be, like, the dubious goals panel.
We could just sit and, like, not even confine it to Scottish football. We could just sit and, like, look at dubious goals all week and talk about them and give them to players.
Well, certainly, boys in the group chat, a few ones, Brian Crombie, is desperate for coronavirus to take over and destroy the world. So if football does get stopped again, then we could just sit and watch dubious goals for a pod.
The beauty about it is you no longer need football to be happening live. Like, you could just think how many goals has been scored in history. You could literally...
Quite a few.
On YouTube and look at historic goals and award them to players. Anyway, I fear we may have gone slightly off track here. Anyone get anything to add about St Johnstone, Ross County? Again, it just comes into that old thing of, like, who's calling that on Saturday afternoon? Who's calling who's winning that? Probably you'd be favouring St Johnstone because they have home advantage, but it just seems so unpredictable, that part of the league, Gamba.
Aye. It kind of reminds me of a couple of seasons ago, I remember we were having it, where it's like, there's definitely a top five. Whoever finishes sixth will end up with less points than whoever, you know, finishes seventh. I think there's probably an argument to be made whoever finishes fifth this season could end up with less points than whoever finishes seventh as well. It is interesting with that win, Ross County are now a point off of Aberdeen and they've played two games less than them now, sorry. So it is interesting to see that even with County being the kind of best of the rest at the moment, they're still... points per game wise, well off the kind of top four. It's going to be brutal. It is going to be brutal in terms of the relegation fight. And again, is why I said I don't think you can call it. And even though I've said I don't think you can call it, we all know Hamilton just aren't getting relegated. So it's going to be brutal. It's going to be a brutal season for relegation fight this year, I think.
I think that's kind of all we've got to say in that game. Apologies, St Johnstone and Ross County fans. It's definitely the final one, although it's not the exact final one in this podcast, because we're going to finish with Aberdeen versus Motherwell at Pittodrie. Going into this game, the Dons had conceded 2 goals in 5 games. Motherwell had only scored 3 in 7 games, so what went and happened? 23 minutes in, Motherwell are winning 3-0 at Pittodrie. I think that feeds into the old unpredictable aspect of the league as well. But Motherwell have won four of their last five games now, including the Coleraine win. Is this the return of the mighty Well Fisher? Is all they had to do get a unsocially distanced picture in Northern Ireland to turn things around?
It was Burrows, man. He gave them a rousing speech, I heard, and they went out and won 3-0. What was actually interesting about this is I remember last week we were sitting here going, oh, maybe like Aberdeen like have turned a corner with these results, and maybe McInnes does know what he's doing. And obviously then they won it, went one in Europe, and then as you say, 23 minutes and they're getting humped off Motherwell at Pittodrie. I just thought Aberdeen, I don't know what happened to them in that first half, but they were all over the place. I mean, obviously, I think it's the correct decision for the penalty. It's really poor from Joe Lewis for the second goal, and then it's a good header from McGarvey, but the defending again is really, really poor. And it was, I think, Chris Long then scores to obviously to make it 4, and it's ruled out by offside. I mean, this could have been a real doing. I mean, Stephen Robinson was literally sitting there laughing on the bench when that fourth goal got ruled out. Like, when have you ever seen Stephen Robinson laughing on the touchline? It's just, it was bizarre. But I think we've all said on the podcast though that Motherwell, despite them struggling, we thought that at some point it would start to click. And obviously the game against Coleraine wasn't really wasn't one for the football purists, but it was still a good game and it was still difficult for them, bearing in mind that Coleraine obviously put out Maribor beforehand and had won that game in penalties as well. But I mean, from a Motherwell perspective, to get through that tie, I don't think we're very confident for them against Beersheba, but for them to get through that tie and then to go away to Pittodrie, I mean, that's a good week. That's a really strong week for Motherwell, and a really strong performance. You'd be hoping that that would be a kind of turning point for Motherwell, where they can go, right, the first part of the season is over with, and we've shown that we are a better side than what people sort of saw at the start of the season. And as I say, going away to Pittodrie against an Aberdeen team that were on a really strong run of form is really impressive. And I would probably say that's the result of the weekend, certainly for me anyway.
Yeah, Aberdeen could probably get away with the European hangover excuse had they not been playing a team who were also on a European hangover after playing Thursday night.
I saw people doing that. It was like, oh, well, they've had these problems. It's like they'll be knackered from Thursday. Go like, wait a minute, they're playing a team that played extra time on Thursday. Like, what the fuck?
That was only in Northern Ireland though, Gamba. Come on.
Ah, true, I suppose. It's not Europe, is it?
Did you hear see Stephen Robinson's comments on the Coleraine pitch? I saw them in the paper. This was, for some reason, after the game yesterday. I don't know why he's still going on about it, but he effectively, well, I was a bit funny there. I'm not going to try that for some reason. He basically said that the pitch was a disgrace and a leveller, which seemed a bit strange to say it after the game on Sunday when he didn't say anything. Like, he said, I'm allowed to say it now, as if, like...
I mean, the embargo's been lifted.
Write your own jokes there in Northern Ireland, yeah. But it was weird.
There was no shadowy UEFA figures at Pittodrie, so we thought, I can say it now.
Strange, man, like the timing of that. Anyway, moving on to Aberdeen, just briefly, as we say, disappointing weekend for them. Also looks like they're going to lose Scott McKenna. Nottingham Forest, £3 million been talked about there. Crazy when they were turning down, when they're not turning down, like,
Seven and a half.
Is that not the worst business we've ever seen in the history of Scottish football? I know there's been a few, but only selling them for three now, doesn't seem, I mean, £3 million you'd argue is still an alright fee, but when they were apparently turning down and £6-7 million and had a £10 million price tag on McKenna, it doesn't seem as much now. But yeah, it's not all bad for Aberdeen. They did have a certain lady on Twitter taking nudist photos around Pittodrie yesterday, so at least there's something for the fans to get excited about there.
I'm gonna plead the fifth. I don't know what you're talking about, mate.
What? Well, I'm talking to the listener. I mean, what is actually going on now with all of these? I mean, we've all seen these accounts on Twitter. Like, there's ones that are tweeting Rangers players and that. Is this, have these kind of I don't know if you call them porn sites or what, but have they just like seen a gap in the market with football teams and football fans?
Horny football dads are clearly a good market. That's the thing, but see on Twitter, if you get like a half decent looking female in your team's top, the replies are an absolute hellhole, but they're probably a good earner, do you know what I mean? Allegedly, apparently.
I've heard.
Right, guys, we've again gone down another rabbit hole. We're going to finish the podcast by looking at Europa League on Thursday, but we're not going to do it in any depth at all. Quite simply, I'm going to go through the games. I'm going to ask you guys whether the Scottish team will proceed or whether they will not proceed. We'll start at 6 p.m. on Thursday night with Celtic. Now, Celtic are playing in Latvia against Riga FC. Gamba, will Celtic proceed?
If the stadium holds up, then yes. If not, they might proceed on the Friday.
I am going to say that Celtic will also proceed. Fisher?
Yeah, I would imagine that they'll go through.
I did say we weren't going to go into detail, but I'm just going to quickly say that Riga aren't as bad as some people believe. Like, they did nearly qualify for the Europa League group stage last year. They ran Copenhagen close, closer than Celtic did, may I add. And I think in six home European games against the Polish champions, the Finnish champions, Copenhagen, they've only conceded two goals. So it may be tricky for Celtic, but we're all going for Celtic. Also at 6 o'clock on Thursday, there's Willem II. Don't know what the first one's doing against Rangers.
That's been moved to 8, I can confirm.
Has it?
Yeah.
Is that so the Rangers fans can watch Celtic beforehand?
Probably, mate, yes. Because that's what I'll be doing with my sound up, even though it'll be artificial crowd noise. So I don't even know what I'm talking about now, to be honest, Hamish. Anyway, back to the game. I know you said you didn't want any detail on this, but Willem II are on a decent run of form.
Is that how you say it? Twee?
Yeah, Willem II, I believe. I could be wrong. I don't know. Hopefully, our Dutchman Jan still listens and he can correct us. But
well, he loves Willem so much, he's got it in his name.
Oh, so much bad patter flying about in this pod. I'll say yes. I think maybe yes. Rangers will go through.
I think Rangers will go through as well. Like, I know we look at a team from Holland and we think they're not a bad team, and they aren't a bad team. They'll certainly be a step up for Lincoln Red Imps, but Rangers are a last 16 Europa League team. Like, Rangers have beaten better teams than Willem. I know, again, they're away from home, but I suppose there's no fans there. But Rangers kind of seem to save their best football for away from home when teams come onto them. So, yes for me, Gamba.
Yeah, they'll go through. Rangers will go through, absolutely.
Right, now we get on to the trickier ones. 6:30, Hapoel Beersheva versus Motherwell. I struggle to see this one for whatever reason. As well as Motherwell played against Aberdeen, I know they're not playing a European heavyweight here, but I just think away from home, knowing my own history with Celtic going there, very kind of tough place to go, albeit that was with fans. It's a no for me, no procession for Motherwell.
Yeah, I don't think they're going through either. I don't think they'll be disgraced by any means. I think it might just be a step too far for them.
I broke into a cold sweat when I heard Beersheva was who they tied. Probably none of those players still play for them now. But still, just that the thought of that second leg, man, no. Based on absolutely nothing apart from that game, I don't see it happening. Just bad memories of that game.
And finally, probably the biggest one, the most enticing game there, Sporting Lisbon against Aberdeen. We don't yet know exactly what state Sporting Lisbon are going to be in. If it's any sort of proper Sporting Lisbon, then it's a no contest for me. I mean, this is a team who have sold a player last year who has probably become Man United's best player, albeit he obviously won't be playing on Thursday, but they do still have a lot of good players there, having gone them on Football Manager recently. I struggle to see it. Even if Aberdeen had got a good result yet on Sunday, I would have struggled to see it. I don't really know what we're hoping for, just that Sporting Lisbon are out of, you know, not in the right shape. Maybe still a few players missing, have not played a lot of football, maybe even struggling with the virus still a little bit. I don't know. Aberdeen just have no hope from my point of view.
I would probably agree with that. I think obviously we're not really sure what the kind of situation is at the moment, but you would be hoping that Sporting would be playing kind of their reserves or their youth players due to the effects of the virus or something like that. But I think having looked at their squad and some of the players that they've got in there, if it's a full strength sporting squad, then I really do struggle to see Aberdeen getting a result.
Just to introduce some form of conflict into this podcast, well, I do think Sporting Lisbon will hump Aberdeen. I'm going to go on record saying Aberdeen will go through, just so it's not a clean sweep of opinions that we've got there.
Not Sporting Lisbon, by the way, Sporting Club de Portugal.
De Portugal, yes.
We can't get that wrong. Right, finishing the podcast, Burst Bot Fantasy Football. Top is Kenny Gardner. 17 points, though. Imagine getting 17 points and still being top of a league with 802 people. Clearly, I mean, looking at the top of the table, a lot of them struggling this week. Kenny Gardner struggling, 17 points. Second is Andrea Bjornley with 25. Third is Craig Dallas, who I think was last week's leader. He gets 17 this week. So the the chasing pack are doing that, and they're making up ground, so you better watch out, top three. But well done to Kenny. Don't know if he's a podcast listener. If he's not, he'll never hear this, but if he is, congratulations. But as we know, no trophies are handed out in September. You need to wait to May for that. On that note, guys, we're done for another podcast. It's been a fun one, this. Thanks very much, Andrew Gamba.
Thank you for having me, Hamish.
And Callum Fisher, thanks very much.
Good to be on again, keeping up my consistent performances, Hamish.
Yes, very reliable member at the moment, as are you, listener. Thanks very much. We'll speak to you soon, and goodbye.